to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
If your kids wear Disney costumes to the Disney parks, has this ever happened to you?
Mommy dropped my ice cream on my princess dress.
Or this?
Daddy, why is my dress so itchy?
Or even this.
Mommy, my inner dress ripped again.
If these kind of problems slow down your Disney vacation, then check out Mom Approved Costumes. At Mom Approved Costumes, Christy and her staff have tested out each one of the children costumes and can vouch for their safety, machine washability, and non-itchy stitching. They've even been tested in the Walt Disney World washers. So check out Mom Approved Costumes on Facebook and the website momapprovedcostumes.com.
Thank you, Mommy!
To all who come to this happy place, welcome. Disneyland is your land. Here age relives fond memories of the past, and here youth may savor the challenge and promise of the future. Disneyland is dedicated to the ideals, the dreams, and the hard facts that have created America, with the hope that it will be a source of joy and inspiration to all the world.
Hello and welcome to show number 41 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. On this week's show, we're going to talk a little bit about Disneyland. That's right, we're going to be talking about the Left Coast. I have the pleasure of being joined by Ed. Ed, how you doing?
Good, Jimmy. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Appreciate you being here tonight. And we have Jen from ForTheLoveOfDisney.com. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Pretty good, thanks. And Sam from Sam's Disney Diary. Sam, what's happening?
Jimmy, what is going on? I am ready to jump into an open-air monorail and cruise around Disneyland. Let's go.
I am so happy to be here. So on this week's show, we're going to talk about Disneyland. We're really going to focus this week on kind of the nuts and bolts about how to get there, some of the places to stay.
Jimmy and I have never been to Disneyland, but Sam and Jen have gone a couple times each. So we're going to use some of their knowledge to get us out to the West Coast, to get us to California. So we're going to basically kind of grill them about some of the ways they plan and how they actually get to California, what airport, how they get to the hotels, things like that. What we're going to do is start a series of Disneyland shows. So as we continue on with the series, we'll be able to then explore Disneyland in more depth and detail, a lot more of the history of the park and some more of the nuances and tips and things like that. And the first question I have as far as a Disneyland trip, because I'm a planner, is how does the planning go? Do you guys go to just the regular Walt Disney site and then go to the Disneyland page, or are there actually specific Disneyland pages to go to or websites?
I actually started out on the Disneyland.com website, which looks very familiar to Disney World veterans. It's set up very similarly. In fact, it looks almost identical, which is interesting because some of the other parks worldwide don't look exactly the same. But if you are a Disney World veteran, you'll find your way around the Disneyland site quite nicely. There are a couple differences as far as the types of hotels that are offered and things that we'll probably talk about in a little bit, but it's a great resource to start out with. Some of the same resources that we use for Disney World, All Ears Net and the Disboards have some great Disneyland sections as well.
So definitely, Ed, it was Disneyland.com for me. But I will say, as far as grilling us, I've only been there twice. And it's one of those things where, as a Walt Disney World regular, absolutely love the Orlando parks. When the D23 Expo was held in Orange County at the Anaheim Convention Center, which is across the street from Disneyland, it's something that I just couldn't pass up. So my first trip was actually the second convention, which was in 2011, and I've been back once since then. But Disneyland.com, as Jennifer said, is very familiar if you're used to WaltDisneyWorld.com. Although the parks look similar, they're really quite unique and different, and it was definitely enjoyable to attend Disneyland to discover all the things that are there.
Yeah, I have to agree with Sam. We went, my husband and kids and I went, and thought we would go once, you know, thinking it's smaller, it's far away, we'll see what's different, we'll go where Walt was, and we'll have said we did it, we can check it off our list and never go back. And now we want to go back as often as possible, which is not that often, but we thoroughly enjoyed it. Different experience altogether, but definitely a great one.
When talking about Walt Disney World, we use touringplans.com as a reference quite often. And I know they have a section for Disneyland. Have either one of you used that resource?
I did, actually. I heard of that RideMax actually has a great program for Disneyland. I know they have something for Disney World as well. I've never used it for either. But I was familiar with Touring Plans, so we did use that for Disneyland.
And what is RideMax?
Honestly, I have not used it, but I think that it has a more specific... I know I heard somebody talking about it having an app or a website for Disney World as well, but I think it's more developed on the West Coast, so I've okay. never quite looked into it. But it seems very, from what I understand, very sort of commando touring, as far as you'll get in line at this time and you'll stand in line for this many minutes, kind of as Touring Plans does, but with less of the why behind why you're doing it and more strict planning. So... But I've heard good things about it in Disneyland, so something worth checking out.
Okay.
So I didn't. And I'll tell you why. Because I wanted to experience the parks and not worry about getting in line for this and getting in line for that. I just wanted to take it in and be able to walk down Main Street and just look around and know this is where Walt was. So it was a completely different experience, and I didn't want any of those pre-planned trips. There's two parks. I had 5 days. I thought I had lots of time, which I did, and I just wanted to experience it as it went naturally.
Sam, I'm curious. Did you go with your family, or were you at the conference by yourself?
I did have my family with me.
Okay, cool.
They attended the conference as well, so there were five
Very
of us.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I was curious if that would have changed my – I think I probably would have been less concerned about what to expect had I just been able to go by myself, but
– Just nerd out?
Yes.
So if you're by yourself, right, you just nerd out. You just,
yes.
I'm doing that either way, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah. It's true. Sam just drags the family along.
They just come with me. I mean, they leave me on a bench and leave.
Now, we've talked about this before. Mine are still in the napping, you know, bottle-taking stage when we went. So maybe that was a difference as well. But it definitely is something that I think it can go either way. The one thing I noticed that I learned and kind of the reason that Touring Plans was nice to have, but then maybe we didn't follow it very strictly every day, is Disneyland is a lot of locals and a lot of annual pass holders, whereas Walt Disney World is a destination for people to come from all over the world. I don't remember the exact stat. I had come across it while I was planning, but a huge majority of the people that are in Disneyland on any given day are actually Southern California residents with annual passes, which changes your touring, it changes your dining, it changes just about everything about your trip. So I found that really interesting.
So the stats that I've read, Jen, are basically 75-25, and it's a split. So when you go to Walt Disney World, 75% of the people in the park are tourists that are there for their week. They're getting in their Disney time, and 25% are your annual pass holders. Completely flip that around in California, where only 25% of the people are your vacationers. The others are all locals. And that really does change the dynamics of the park. You wouldn't think so, but it does.
It does, from planning, like actually, you know, we'll talk on a future show, I'm sure, but getting a dining reservation is super easy because people probably just go back to their house to eat, as I would if I go to a local amusement park. It's very different from a planning standpoint, as well as the people you meet in line, the cast members. You know, I'm not going to say what's good or bad about it, but it really truly felt like a different destination because I think in large part because of that dynamic.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions was as far as planning your dining, how far out do you have to plan it? Well, it looks like the 180-day time frame really doesn't matter then. It sounds like you can almost kind of wing it going to the park. Or did you have dining reservations beforehand?
We had a couple, but we made Ariel's Grotto reservations 2 days before we dined there. And Ariel's Grotto in Disneyland is sort of the, I don't want to overstate it, but I would say that maybe it's kind of the Cinderella Royal Table. Not that it's that hard to get by any means, because you don't have to call at 7 a.m, 180 days in advance. As I said, we got reservations 2 days before for 4 of us plus an infant, but it's the character dining that includes a meet and greet with free, you know, picture packages included and all sorts of, you know, bells and whistles on the dining experience. It was a really big deal and we practically walked up. I think we really could have. So it's night and day.
Awesome. Good to know that.
So the only pre-reservations that I did are the ones that I knew I had to do, like the Blue Bayou.
Sure.
And I also did a couple of VIP packages, one for Fantasmic and the other for World of Color. We'll talk about those on future shows. But I wanted to make sure I didn't not only have that dining, but that VIP location to view, because I really didn't know when I was going to be back. So I wanted to have that front row seat.
I think that's great advice, because if you're going, really, I mean, anything can happen at Walt Disney World, but especially if you're going to a park that you're not quite as familiar with, I would hate to get out there and whether it's a once in a lifetime trip or not, but just because of, you know, things I don't know about and find out there's a large group or for some fluke, there's, you know, it's impossible to get in. So yeah, I think that's a great piece of advice. If there's something, you know, you have to do, they do take reservations in advance. So it's certainly worth making.
Okay. So now we have our planning done and we're going to be flying into California. I've never been to California, Los Angeles. What airport are we flying into to go to Disneyland?
So you have quite a few options here, and I will add that both times that I visited Disneyland, it was more than just a Disneyland vacation. So it was a Southern California vacation, I should say, and Disneyland was a big piece of it. And as you plan that, you'll find that there's more than one airport there nearby. And of course, everybody immediately thinks of LAX, Los Angeles's big airport, which is the biggest, which means there are more flights into LAX, lots of flights in, nice long flights from the East Coast. And LAX is about 35 miles from Disneyland, which isn't bad. In comparison, from Orlando Airport to Walt Disney World, it's about 20 miles. So it's a little bit further than that, but it's manageable. It's a very busy airport. If you're renting a car or even getting some type of transportation over, they have the equivalent of mirrors out there so that you can prearrange those types of things. So LAX is a big one. The one that I like is Orange County. So Orange County Airport, it's a much smaller airport. It's the John Wayne Airport, you'll hear it referred to as.
Okay, yeah, I've heard that name.
Yep, it's about 9 miles, and it's a very small airport, easy to get in and out of, but not as many flights into it.
The thing about that as well, that's where we flew as well as John Wayne, and if you're booking flights, the airport code is SNA, which doesn't have anything to do with Orange County or John Wayne, if you ask me, but there it is. Maybe Santa Ana, I think, is nearby there as well, but it was small, so I was a little concerned, actually, that we wouldn't be able to get where we were going, but it's not so small that you can't find rental cars easily or transportation. And as Sam mentioned, it's so close to the Disneyland Resort that if you're staying there or even one of the Good Neighbor hotels, it was very easy to get a car and drive. And even in Los Angeles, we were there in no time.
There's no Disney buses, that's for sure. But you'll find lots of local taxis that'll take you just about anywhere or pre-arranged transportation. I typically rented a car. One of the other times that I flew in, we kind of went one way, two different directions, and actually flew into San Diego and then left from Orange County. San Diego is about 95 miles to Disneyland. So you can think of all of the day activities and things that you can do in the San Diego area. So it's definitely a pretty cool week if you could spend 4 or 5 days at Disneyland, 3 or 4 days near San Diego. It could be one heck of a trip, that's for sure.
That sounds like a great idea, actually.
Sure, that's the plan someday. Okay, so we've gotten through to the airport. We've gotten our transportation to Disneyland. So where do you guys stay hotel-wise? You've both been, it sounds like, a couple times. Have you stayed on property, or what is on property? How many hotels do they even have?
So Disneyland has 3 on-site hotels. Disney's Grand Californian, the Disneyland Hotel, the original, and Paradise Pier. I was there twice and was fortunate enough to stay at 2 of those. I spent a few days at the Grand Californian and also stayed at the Disneyland Hotel, which is the original and absolutely wonderful. So I was definitely on site, parked my car, never had to move it. Everything's close enough that you can walk to anything.
Now, I actually stayed in what they call good neighbor hotels. And I think, you know, we look at Disney World and it has, what, 20-something, pushing 30 hotels on site or in Downtown Disney included. You certainly have that many. It's not like that. As Sam mentioned, there are 3 on-site Disney properties. So Disneyland has a deal with, I'm looking at the Disneyland website, it looks like currently 39 good neighbor hotels.
A lot, yeah.
And these are ranging from, I mean, they call them economy, moderate, superior, and suites. Now, some of these are a few miles away, but others of them are in closer walking distance to the main gate than even one of the Disneyland on-property hotels. So that's where you get into kind of a debate among Disneyland regulars, I think, with, like you said, what exactly is on-property and what's not. I have not stayed in one of the 3 Disneyland hotels, and I imagine that we would like to someday, because I imagine that the Disney magic that you get in Disney World, while it's a little different in Anaheim, you're not in quite the bubble that you're in Orlando. I imagine that the service and everything is still top notch, but the good neighbor hotels, there are several that are with less than a block or a block or 2 away from the main gates of the parks. We walked with children not in a stroller from the Fairfield Inn, which is one of the hotels, as well as the Howard Johnson, which is a really popular one among people, I think, who travel out there and stay for a little while with kids. We walked with children in less than 10 minutes to the main gates. So definitely still lots of options in all different price ranges. And for us, honestly, the other thing is the hotels we stayed at had lots of Disney touches. They were certainly not, themed as extravagantly as some of the Disney World properties we might be used to. But they had Disney art, and they had some of them even, you know, Disney bedding and things like that. So definitely really something that we were happy to have as an option when we couldn't stay on property.
That actually makes a lot of sense, because that was kind of Walt's idea for building Disney World, is because when they built Disneyland, they didn't have a whole lot of property. So all these hotels and stuff popped up right outside of the front gate. So it's neat to hear that Disney has kind of partnered with them and kind of supports them rather than trying to, you know, compete.
Well, and you will notice that right away, the difference in, as you mentioned, Jimmy, the lack of land that they had in California or have in California versus why they moved to Florida with so much more space. The parks are great. There's so much to do in each of them. But as soon as you leave them, there definitely is not the same, as I mentioned, kind of jokingly, the Disney bubble. But you're not in, I mean, you're in Anaheim. There's lots of, you know, the real world outside. There's gas stations, there's grocery stores, there's traffic, there's things that remind you that you're, you know, in the real world. And that wasn't a bad thing. It was just different, for sure. So that might be one of the things that's different about staying at a good neighbor hotel. I don't know. Sam might be able to speak to that. Maybe he felt a little bit more in the bubble. But as we were driving down the highway from John Wayne Airport, we saw the Matterhorn, which is so different. So it's pretty much just right there in the middle of the rest of civilization, which is pretty cool, but definitely missing that factor of kind of separating yourself from real life.
Right.
They do their best to separate you from it, but it's there.
Right.
Which turns out to be pretty nice sometimes, because you can leave one of the Disney hotels walk a half a block and you're at a convenience store.
Yeah, it was kind of cool.
Which isn't that bad. And like Jen had said, on if you think about where Disneyland was built, and if you look at Google Maps, you'll see this. Disneyland's built, and there's a huge parking lot across the street, and we all see the orange groves, and then all these things fill in around it. Well, as time progresses, eventually that parking lot that was across the street from the main gate becomes California Adventure. So there's a causeway in the center where you walk in under this banner that says Welcome to Disneyland, and on your right-hand side is the gate to Disneyland, and on your left-hand side is the gate to California Adventure. They're both right there. You know, a whole new meaning to park hopping. You can just walk across the causeway here. And now if you keep going straight, that's downtown Disney. It's all connected together. And in fact, one of the reasons why the partner resort is closer to the main gate than Disney resorts is because the Disneyland Hotel and the Grand Californian are on the other side of downtown Disney. So when you come out of the Disneyland Hotel, you have two options. One is you can get on a monorail, which is somewhat interesting because the monorail, when you go to get on it, you show your tickets before you get on the monorail because it lets you off in the center of Tomorrowland, which is really cool. You're in the middle of the park when you step off that monorail. Or you can walk the length of downtown Disney, right? There's an ESPN club, there's a Rainforest Cafe, House of Blues, the World of Disney, you name all the things that are the best of Walt Disney World. And then you come to the other end and you're in that causeway where Disneyland and California Adventure are here. So everything's compact and there are no buses. There are no, you don't have to ride the monorail, although it's there and you can. Getting from park to park in downtown Disney is very easy. I mean, you can't leave Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom to grab lunch downtown and come back. And that's very easy to do in California.
And Sam, I don't know about you. I had heard that from people that I knew who had, you know, lived closer to Disneyland and gone several times from different internet sites that, oh, it's so much more compact and you go right across the promenade from one to the other and you can really go back and forth. And I heard that, but showing up for the first time and walking through that, you go through one security check and you get in this one promenade where everything is just right there. To see that for the first time was just mind blowing, like how close everything really was, even after trying to kind of expect it. It's really kind of cool, but
it is. It's pretty neat.
I think you have to kind of see it. So
the whole entry process is similar to WDW?
As far as security checks, yes.
Security but checks and you
as
go
Jen
up to
mentioned,
the...
there's bag checks coming in, but there's one bag check on both ends. So one end is coming in from one of the main streets in the partner hotels, and the other end is coming in from downtown Disney. And there's a bag check there, and once you're inside, then you're free to go in whichever turnstiles. And by the way, there's still turnstiles; they have not converted to Magic Bands. You can go in either way.
Okay, well, that was my next question, because one of my favorite shows are the Sounds from the Park kind of shows, and they have a show that goes through, and anybody going to Disneyland, as they go through the turnstiles, they have that specific chimes for every person that walks through.
Yep.
And I was curious to see if they switch over to the bands, if they'll keep that sound effect.
You know, I would venture to guess that they won't for a very long time anyway. And I mean, it's just that difference in the vacationer versus local, as we talked about earlier. Even we noticed the efficiency of moving people through. Maybe it was a bad week that we were there, but it took quite a while to kind of get in at the beginning of the day, and it just, people moving around wasn't quite as top-notch as Disney World is kind of known for. But the other thing I wanted to mention was that because of the way the security is, as Sam was discussing and kind of laying it out, you can truly get a fast pass, which, by the way, they still have legacy fast pass machines.
Yep,
obviously,
absolutely.
Because we were talking about the Magic Bands not existing. You can get a fast pass in California Adventure while the rest of your party goes to Disneyland Park, and it's completely reasonable to hop over and ride Soarin' at California Adventure and then go right back over to Disneyland Park. It's that close that you can go back and forth almost as if they're different lands. Now with kids, I don't want to again overstate, but we didn't go back and forth that frequently, but I've heard of a lot of people who do. So kind of a completely different way to park hop if you wanted to do that.
Another advantage of being on site, one of the Disney properties, is an extra magic hour, which they do have every day, and it's an hour in the morning. It's every day at California Adventure. It's select days, at least last time I was there at Disneyland, where if you have your room key, they'll let you in an hour early. Now, the cool part for California Adventure is, and actually it's a trivia question that I ask a lot. Everyone knows that Walt Disney World's Epcot has two entrances, or at least I think everybody does. It's got the front entrance, and then there's an entrance at the International Gateway. California Adventure also has two entrances. There's the main entrance in the front, and there's another entrance that you can only get to from inside the Grand Californian. And if you are a resort guest at any of the Disneyland resorts, you can enter that gate 1 hour early, which becomes very important for things like Radiator Springs Racers and World of Color Fast Passes and those types of things. So it is one perk of staying at one of the three Disney resorts.
I will say, since we're talking about planning too, there are, you know, just some things that you'll come across as you're planning for Disneyland versus Disney World that are just different and then confusing, at least to me at first. So they have Extra Magic Hour, which is called that for the on-property folks. But then there's also a perk for the Good Neighbor hotels, at least there was when we were there last year. Maybe called like Morning Magic. It's something way too similar where you get to choose one of your days of your 3 to 5 day park hopper to enter early. Now, it's not every day, but it's you basically choose it once. And once you've used your allotment of early entry, then it's gone. But it has a very similar name, but it is a different program. So just something to kind of look into as you're planning. It's a perk, but it's you have to kind of keep an eye out on what you're looking for, because you wouldn't want to show up every morning after you've already used it or, you know, try to get it multiple times.
I did not know that because I wasn't at a Good Neighbor, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah. But it's definitely different because it's not, I mean, it's, we had to decide which day we wanted to use it, which was kind of an interesting piece of the puzzle. So
you mentioned your park hopper pass. Now that means you have to buy the special upgrade to go back and forth between the parks, just like Walt Disney World.
We actually got tickets from Undercover Tourist, and I can't honestly remember how we paid for those specifically, but I'm looking at the Disneyland website, and it looks like there is a $39 ticket park hopper option to enjoy same-day admission to Disneyland Park and Disneyland California Adventure Park. So very similar to Walt Disney World, base ticket, one park per day, park hopper ticket is a single price for the length of your stay. However, unlike Walt Disney World, they kind of cap the number of days, whereas at Disney World you save more and more and they like you to buy 10, 12, 14 days there. The options from the Disneyland website are 1 day tickets through 5 day tickets, and that's it. So different, and maybe some people will say you only need a couple days, but we certainly spent the whole of our 4 day ticket and could have spent some more time in the park. So I guess it depends what you're going for.
It looks like one of the bigger reasons for that is I think you guys hit it on the head when you said that, not, you know, 75% of the guests there are locals.
Mm-hmm.
So a 5 day park hopper ticket is $305 for adult. And there's a Southern California City Pass that's $331. So that's probably why they limit it to that 5 day, because the majority of their customers are local, so they probably buy that city pass, and it's more of an annual pass.
The annual passport is what the locals would get. The Southern California City Pass, we actually have them in like Chicago and other places in the Midwest, but City Pass is like a third-party company that offers. So in this case for Southern California, it's a 3 day Disneyland pass as well as like a day at SeaWorld and something else. So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah, so there is an annual pass. I'm trying to find the price of that. It looks like that's $600 or $700 still. So
I used that city pass on that trip I mentioned going to San Diego and coming up, and was able to snag on Legoland and the San Diego Zoo in addition to Disneyland. So that's sort of how I capped it off on one of those, which was pretty cool.
What's interesting is they sell the city pass on Disney's website.
Yeah. Yeah, it is different. It's definitely different than I mean, there's nothing outside of Walt Disney World's gates. They don't really sell anything else to you from the Disney company. So
yeah, you couldn't get, like, in Walt Disney World, you couldn't get
Universal tickets.
A pass that allows you to go to Universal as well.
Right.
So you're going to find a consistent here. And Jen and I have said this again and again. It's different. Is it better? I don't know if it's better. It's different. And I love the fact that it's different because that makes me want to go back again.
For me, I had to I have to manage my expectations pretty well. And I think that in order to not be disappointed, but I think that so many people think, oh, if you're used to Walt Disney World, you're going to hate Disneyland. I've literally heard that before. And I can't understand that. And I had people ask why we were going because we, you know, we have a park that's so much bigger and there's four parks versus two and so many more hotels. And there's that argument that it's got more in that regard, but strict number of attractions, Disneyland literally competes, even though it's only two parks. But beyond that, it's we just had to think of it as a different vacation. Certainly not to say that it's like your local theme park, because the Disney magic and the nostalgia of it just are incomparable to any local theme park that I've been to. But and they put it, you know, much more with Walt Disney World or even above it in that regard. But we had to know that we weren't going to completely forget that we had a life outside of Disney World or Disneyland. We had to know that we were doing other things in Southern California and that, you know, yes, it was smaller and yes, it looked different. And but as Sam said, that was certainly not worse. We just sort of had to know that we would try to compare apples to oranges if we were comparing the two, and that you just can't.
You can't. And here's a great example of that. If you take Studios, for example, and let's take Studios and go to Disneyland. Over in California Adventure, you're going to find Soarin'. Well, Soarin's at Epcot. You'll find Soarin', you'll find Muppet Vision, you'll find Tower of Terror. You'll find Toy Story Mania. And Star Tours is over in Disneyland. That's a lot of attractions right there that are represented in Disneyland that now they're pretty much the same as their Disney World counterparts, but it's pretty cool that you can still go see those. Hey, there's Muppet Vision. Let's go check it out.
And the Disneyland Parks Fantasyland has what almost double the amount of attractions. It has an Alice in Wonderland dark ride. It has two storybooks, not storybook circus, but Storybook Canal and then the Casey Jr. train ride through this adorable storybook land. And I mean, it has more dark rides and more rides in Fantasyland that we just honestly hadn't even heard of until we were looking into this trip. So it's not as if they've just picked up the Magic Kingdom from Disneyland and plunked it in Florida and it's exactly the same. We actually kind of quote unquote lost a few rides in Florida that Disneyland has that are really amazing.
Absolutely. Mr. Toad.
Yes. Well, yeah, yeah.
You're Snow White Scary about, Adventure.
You're talking about literally lost. I mean, that we didn't even ever get, like, I mean, for better or worse, Roger Rabbit's Cartoon Spin. And that's another Toontown at Disneyland is amazing. And so there's, a lot of attractions packed into a small space.
We have at least three shows of stuff to talk about there. That's for
yes,
sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, and I can't wait. That's why this is going to be such a great series of shows. I want to learn everything about Disneyland I can. I want to get out there probably in the next 2 years is the short goal. So I want you guys to tell us as much as you can. And hopefully we'll get some of our friends from the Facebook page and from the website onto the show too to help us out with more information. Before we go tonight, I just had two quick questions. The first question is basically, did you guys make it to park opening any of the days?
Yes, every day. Yes. We have early risers. We always wish the parks would open earlier.
Awesome. And we're the same way. Now, do they do any type of rope drop ceremonies like they do at Walt Disney World?
Not like the shows and the fanfare and the Magic Kingdom welcome show and nothing like that. At least when we were there, it was pretty straightforward. Open the park and walk into your rides.
Okay. Yeah, it was. There's the Fast Pass machine over there. Get your World of Color Fast Pass. Move along.
Stand in line over here for Radiator Springs Racers, which is nowhere near the ride, but follow the cast member with the sign. And yeah, there was no family of the day, no big fanfare.
You think that's a product probably of just it being more for locals and not so much for, you know, people on vacation?
Yeah, I think maybe.
I think it's that, and I think a little has to do with the room that they have to deal with. There's not a lot of space at the Mickey Floral right in front of the Strange Station. There's not a lot of room there. not like Disney World. And that's one of the comparisons you'll find. Everything's bigger in Florida. Is that better or not? Well, not necessarily.
If you're opening both parks at the same time, which doesn't always happen, they have different timetables often. But if you're opening at the same time, you couldn't do a loudspeaker show or like loud music at one versus the other without kind of having some bleed over of the music in the middle of the promenade by the ticket booth. So there's probably a lot of just logistical barriers to that.
Now, one thing I'd add for the Disney resorts that my kids were a little disappointed in, and it goes with the whole size comment that we had, the swimming pools. They look great. They're awesome looking, but they're not all that big in comparison to their counterparts in Florida. Yeah, they have a water slide. Yeah, the Disneyland swimming pool's awesome because the sliding boards have monorails on them, and it's that old retro Disneyland look, but they're not that big, and there was a little bit of disappointment.
In that, there's a kind of a benefit to looking at your other hotels as well. Again, I think we would really try to stay on property next time. I think that there's something to be said for being in, you know, kind of immersed in the Disney magic, but there are some hotels that have like splash parks and things like that. So whatever you're looking for, I imagine there are students, but I imagine there are some hotels that have breakfast included. So one of the upsides of, you know, being not quote unquote on property at all of the resorts is that you have a lot of options. So maybe something to look into depending on what your priorities are. We didn't spend a lot of time at the pool, but if that's something that your family does, then maybe there are some. That's a really interesting point because the pools are amazing at Disney World. So,
sure.
It's an expectation thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, now my second question before we finish for tonight.
Trader Sam's was awesome. Is that your question? And I was there while my kids were complaining about the swimming pools, by the way.
Oh, we're going to get to Trader Sam's. No. My question is, and actually it's kind of a preview for our next couple shows in this series, is if you could give us something from Disneyland that you feel stuck out the most, whether it was an attraction, whether it was a show, whether it was something that you just have to do, what would it be?
Can I have two?
Sure.
I need like six.
I know, but the two that I have to answer that I cannot decide between, World of Color is indescribable. I had watched it on YouTube and it looks neat and the music's cool, and but to see it in person is unreal. And then Cars Land, the details are amazing. We were there for about 5 minutes when my husband noticed that the traffic light in the center, it truly looks like Radiator Springs, and the traffic light in the center blinks a little slower every third time. I mean, which you get if you maybe remember that part of the movie, but they have gone to such great lengths to make you step foot into Radiator Springs that it's unbelievable.
Excellent. Now, Sam, I'll give you two because Jen had two.
All right. And I will say that Radiator Springs was not open when I was there. So that is not one of mine, but I can't wait. That's a reason for me to get back there, right?
It is.
World of Color is amazing. Absolutely. But I'm going to say it's as simple as walking in to Main Street USA around the corner. Yeah, the reveal of the castle isn't all that big, but it's still there and it's cool. But at night while you're coming out, you get that bucket of popcorn from one of the carts and you're looking at the firehouse and you see the candle in the window that's lit and you know that's Walt's apartment. And I can sit there for hours and just look up at that light. And I know it's just a little chintzy light bulb, but it's absolutely amazing to know that that's Walt's apartment.
Yeah,
I'll
no
be
doubt.
Honest, I cried a few times when we were in California at Disneyland. And then we also went to one of the parks that had the merry-go-round that he took his daughters on. And, to be where Walt was is definitely
– And that's enough. We'll talk about comparing rides and doing all that stuff. But that, to me, was just amazing. And wow. And that's Main Street USA, right in front outside the front gate, and just sitting back in and just thinking of all the times he's ridden out of there on the fire truck and signed autographs and come back. That to me was the ultimate Disney nerd moment.
Absolutely.
That's a good one.
So what's your second, since I cut you off?
Well, World of Color, but okay. I'll take another one then. Let's think about this for a second. Fantasyland in general is amazing.
Yeah.
Because Fantasyland, as Jen mentioned, is nothing at all like Walt Disney World, Magic Kingdom, even with New Fantasyland. It's nothing like that. This is – now, I know it was redone a few years back after the original 55 opening, but it's amazing. The Dumbos and the original water effects and the classic circus carousel playing the music in the background. Yeah, that's amazing. Fantasyland. But the whole thing is, it's a small world. Wow.
Oh, my gosh, yes. You went in the summer.
I was there to see the Haunted Mansion overlay. That was cool.
We were there in the spring, so we missed all of the holiday stuff.
So the early Sam's Disney Diaries from episode number 2 through about number 9 are all Disneyland. And that dates back to 2011 when I was there. And I did a lot of video. And that's back when I started this because I thought to myself, I might never be back here. So I have my camera, set it up. We're going to record something and we'll see what it turns into. And it's been a great ride. So.
Very cool.
Sweet.
Turned out really well. Okay, well, thank you guys for showing us how to get to Disneyland and what the kind of the nuts and bolts were all about. I can't wait for the next couple shows when we can start comparing some of the attractions and start talking about how we're going to get around those two parks. Before we go tonight, I just want to let you know, if you are a Disneyland fan and you go a lot and you want to come on the show, send us an email at thedisneynerds@yahoo.com and we'll get you on for one of the next shows in this series on Disneyland.
I need some inside tips. Come on.
Yes.
Definitely. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for the things I don't have to go to Disneyland 10 times to learn. Help me out with my first trip. That'd be great. So, for Sam, Jimmy, Jennifer, and this is Ed, thanks for listening to the Disney Nerds Podcast. We'll see you next week.
Kungaloosh!
Guaharini.
See ya.
Bye-bye.